Welcome everyone to the Suffolk Babies podcast episode 2. Today we're going to talk to you all about baby development and key milestones, but specifically we're going to talk about sensory development. So Jo, let's just have a quick chat to start off with about child development, different things we need to consider, and also from our perspective as parents, why we need to just be mindful not to feel pressured about child development as well.
I think modern parents are under massive amounts of pressure to try and make sure that their child is meeting these key milestones. We talk about milestones all the time, don't we? But to make sure that your child is meeting all of these key milestones. And it's like this pressure comes from lots and lots of different places. So you leave hospital with your red book, which has got all of those tick boxes in it, hasn't it?
Yep.
About when your baby should be doing what. And then in all of our social groupings, you can't help but compare what your baby is doing in comparison to everybody else's baby.
Yep.
And then there is like the marketplace, you know, there's a huge commercial market in making sure your baby gets the best developmental opportunities, and you can buy every different product, you know, under the sun to try and help encourage them onto the next milestone, you know, more quickly. And then our desire really to make sure we're being good parents and judging our own kind of success as a parent.
Yeah, and a lot of the problems with a lot of those things that you just listed is that actually they don't take account for what we know our children as individuals. And we know that there are, as you said, these sensitive periods, otherwise maybe known as leaps in some other areas, but with these sensitive periods, yes, there's defined periods of time where they usually happen, but that doesn't mean if your baby doesn't hit that milestone straight at that point in time that there's a problem either.
No, not at all. I think it's like all the information that we have access to is generalised, and it is going to be on average, you know, on average, most babies will learn to do this around this time. So, you know, it is going to be different for every child. You know, one child will be really, really interested in language and imitating noises and, you know, making those first steps in learning to talk, whereas another child might put all of that energy into wanting to crawl. So it's kind of about, this personality plays a role in this as well. It's not uniform.
And I think it's really important just to say, first and foremost, don't panic. The red book can make you panic. Might make you think that, oh God, why isn't my baby doing this at a certain point in time? Or why isn't my child doing that by this point in time? But please don't panic. They will get there when they're ready, like we said. So just a useful thing, I think, to put out there first and foremost.
I think look at the red book as like a guide, really. It's like the guidebook. And it's a guidebook, not a Bible. So it is kind of like, on average, babies in the UK will, you know, these are the things to look out for in the first 5 years. You know, that's what you should look on the red book as being, not as doctrine.
Yeah,
like.
Brilliant. In terms of child development then, can we kind of break it down? How does it work?
Yeah, well, I always think of child development as broken down into three key areas. So you've got communication and language development, motor skills or becoming mobile, and then sensory development as well. And of course, all three are interlinked. It's not that they're completely, you know, separate things, but there kind of are three different areas if we look at the theories behind those different areas of development.
Yeah, okay. But as you said, they're all interlinked though, so they can all kind of impact the other. But today we're going to specifically talk about sensory development. And sensory development is a really interesting term, isn't it? Because actually, it's often really misused.
It's my current bugbear. It's that thing where, you know, we kind of like talk about sensory and all you think about is flashing lights and some ribbons. And it's just so not like that. That's just such a diluted version of what sensory development really is. So it's hugely misused, mainly because people want to market a product to you. And actually, when you break down the theory of sensory development, it's fascinating. And it's not just development, it's more integration.
Okay, so it's not just about development of the senses, but it's all more about how all those senses can be used together to help your child navigate the world around them.
Absolutely, it's how they all interlink, and I think that is the biggest part misunderstanding when it comes to sensory development, if you like.
Okay, should we just run through the senses? Because a couple of them might be a surprise to people.
Yeah, so I think the first surprise is that, you know, we think of there as being five key senses, don't we? But actually there are seven. So you've got sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch, vestibular and proprioception. And I think it's the vestibular and the proprioceptive sense that people are not used to hearing.
Yeah, we don't commonly talk about those in society, do we? Do you think that's because as adults they are just inbuilt in us? Or do you think it's just that there hasn't been enough research done on them? Or do you think it's people haven't grown up with them?
I think it's that they're innate. You know, they are things that we don't consciously use. Yeah. We don't sort of sit there one day and scratch our heads and go, oh, I've got good proprioception today.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe we should run through kind of those seven senses and just give everyone a little bit of an overview about what they mean for our day to day lives and what they mean for your child and your baby's day to day life. So let's start off with sight.
Yeah, so sight obviously is vision, being able to see things, because babies are born with relatively poor sight. They can only see about 20 inches in front of their face, you know, making eye contact with mummy when she's holding your baby in a cradle position. And sight will sharpen and get better throughout those first 3 months. There's hearing, the auditory sense. Again, babies are born with relatively good hearing. They hear a lot in the uterus. The smell or the olfactory sense. Babies can smell in the uterus. Don't think we realise that a lot of the time. Mm. But obviously smell is a lot stronger in the outside world. So quite overwhelming for babies sometimes. But a key part of how they establish feeding. There's taste, gustatory sense, which is, again, babies have in the uterus, but, you know, they're only really stimulating in the outside world. Touch or the tactile sense. Again, babies have that in the uterus, but it's really underdeveloped because they're surrounded in fluid. Mm. The skin's never been touched. So even, you know, having a baby groper on in the outside world is massive sensory stimulation. And then the vestibular sense, which is all about movement, coordination, and where you are in space, different directional movement. And the proprioceptive sense, which is your body positioning, linked to the vestibular sense, heavily linked, because again, directional movement is about, you know, changing your body position. But proprioception, I suppose, is easier to understand when we think about, you know, grabbing our ear with our hands or scratching our head, touching our nose, that kind of thing, where one limb is in relation to another.
Okay. And I think it's really interesting as well to kind of think about how these senses develop from birth, because in that early period, babies' brains develop so rapidly, don't they?
Yeah, so the first 3 months of life, we can think of as babies' brains are going to develop by or increase in size by about 70%. And a lot of that is neural pathway development. So the neural pathway development is really about how these senses are knitting together so your baby can make sense of the world that they're living in, how they can organise the information they're receiving from their senses and then use that information to interact with the wider environment.
And when we think about how much of a huge leap that is, how much development and growth is happening in the brain in that early period, it's then really easy to understand why, as you just said, so many of these things that we take for granted in the outside world can be so overstimulating for young babies. You know, we don't necessarily think, oh, they might be crying because today we have just changed their nappies and got them dressed again, and that could be like literally sending them over the edge. But that is the case, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Because if you think about the sensory stimulation a newborn baby receives from changing a nappy, it's huge. You're looking at that is really involving nearly all of our senses, isn't it? You know, kind of all of those seven, apart from taste. So, but you know, it's kind of like having your clothes taken off, you know, is tactile stimulation. Then there is the smell potentially of the nappy. There's the change in positioning. There's the movement that involves putting them down on a changing mat. They are listening to you, talking to them. They're then having their bottom cleaned, which again is more tactile stimulation. They've got that baby grow being put back on, clean nappy being put back on. Baby grow being put back
we're all
on.
Trying to look at them to distract them because exactly. they don't want it done.
You're talking away, you're making eye contact, trying to make it fun, and your baby is just going, oh my word.
So, and that's probably why lots of babies cry when they're having their nappy change.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know that, and it is that change in temperature as well. So again, you know, it's kind of tactile stimulation, isn't it? It's change in temperature, it's huge sensory stimulation, and it's just a really uncomfortable process if you're used to being in a uterus surrounded by fluid, warm all the time, no real change in the sensory stimulation. Imagine that the uterus is this bubble with very limited changes in that sensory information that's being given to your baby's brain.
So interesting. So then when we talk about, well, what is appropriate then in terms of sensory development, sensory stimulation, and how can we really help our children not to get overstimulated, but still help them develop these sensory skills, sensory areas appropriately? So if we focus, first of all, on this period directly after birth, this kind of newborn period up to about 3 months. Let's run through sort of our five top things, I guess, that we should be doing with our children to help sensory development, but not overstimulate.
Yeah. So I think the key thing for the first 3 months is that you have to imagine the world outside the uterus as being like a completely foreign land. Sarah Ockwell Smith writes about this a lot, doesn't she? Mm. You know, about how being born is the equivalent of landing in Kathmandu and trying to make sense of that as an adult. And it's so similar. You know, it's a completely foreign world. So your baby is going to need a huge amount of reassurance and as being as close to their old home as possible, which is contact with the mother's body. So like the sensory development in the first 3 months is intrinsically linked to the development of attachment as well. So which we spoke about last time, didn't we? So you do need to be at all times, I'd say the top one is be ultra responsive to your baby. So that's number one. Whatever happens, be responsive to your baby. Offer them constant reassurance in the form of contact with that, you know, paternal body, their safe place, their old home. So so number one is be responsive. Number two is hold your baby. You know, you kind of holding your baby is offering so much sensory stimulation. There's touch there, there's movement, there's change in body position. Make eye contact. You know, it's that's the development of their vision, their sight, but also the foundation of communication with your baby. Mm. So and talk to your baby. You know, absolutely talk to your baby. Again, you're helping develop their language skills and their communication skills with that eye contact and that talking and exchanging words with your baby. And I think skin-to-skin contact as well in those first 3 months, you know, touching your baby, whether that's through very gentle massage. You know, those first 4 weeks your baby's probably not going to want a huge amount of massage because they're going to find it too much in terms of tactile stimulation. But, you know, little bits of massage gradually increasing, or skin-to-skin contact if they find massage too much.
Yeah. Okay, so they don't need toys, we don't need to be jiggling the ribbons in front of their faces at this young age, etc.
I don't think you need to. No, I think the best thing you can give your baby in the first 3 months is, you know, your face, effectively. Hold your baby, make eye contact, talk to your baby, touch your baby. Those are the key things. Toys at 3 months, you know, you don't need them.
Yeah. And the thing we love about all of those things that you've just said is they're all free. So no expenditure. Yeah. And they're going to help to build that really secure attachment as well. So it's a win-win for everyone, really.
Absolutely. So you are kind of not only giving your baby an amazing sensory experience just by spending time with them, but you're also laying the foundation stones of having a really great relationship with your baby and working on that parent attachment and parent bond.
Okay, so if we talk now then, moving on to the next period, so sort of from about 3 months to 6 months, what's happening to your baby's brain? What's happening to their development? And therefore, what do we need to kind of change in terms of sensory development?
So sort of 3-4 months to 6 months, that initial massive brain growth has taken place. There are far more neural pathways present. Your baby is now able to organise that sensory information in a much more kind of a clear and more structured way, so they can take that information and they can use it to interact with their environment an awful lot more. So you kind of see your baby at, you know, kind of 12 weeks beginning to wake up, and they have this massive spurt of development towards 4 months, which can, you know, another huge sensitive period where they, you know, you have sleep disruption, but also they're far more interested in the world around them, and they're desperate to start working on things like their mobilisation and stuff like that as well.
It's interesting, actually, you talk about sleep. Obviously, sleep development and sleep regressions is a totally different podcast, which we will be doing. But it's really important, isn't it, just to remember that when our children do go through these sensitive periods, through these periods of development, things like sleep will be disruptive because their brain is so active.
Absolutely. And if you've got a new skill, you want to use it, don't you? You know, if it's kind of like you've suddenly made sense of it, you kind of are far more alert, you're far more switched on, you're far more likely to want to kind of keep on practicing that skill and using that skill all the time. So yeah, sleep is disrupted, and you might well find that you have this bright, alert baby at 3 o'clock in the morning who just wants to make eye contact and smile at you because they've worked out how to do it.
Yeah. And then when they learn to babble, they wake up 5 in the morning going blah, blah, blah,
just
blah, blah,
blah. Chat, you know, just this like, look mummy, look what I can do.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it just, I think it helps again just to reiterate in this environment that we're all kind of going through the same thing, but it is normal that you will experience things like disrupted sleep when they are going through these development loops. But it's actually a good thing because it's demonstrating that things are happening, that the brain is developing and growing and totally normal.
And they're sleeping the way they're designed to sleep. Baby sleep is different to adult sleep. So it is going to be, they're not going to sleep for as long, you know, in such long periods in one go. They're not. They're going to sleep for shorter periods. They're going to wake up. They're going to want to move about. They're going to want to use those new skills. They want to, can solidify that neural pathway development that's taking place. Every day is a school day with a baby. Mm. It's kind of like everything, the whole environment is sensory stimulation all the time.
Yeah. We digress, which I'm sure will happen in these podcasts regularly with us two. Anyway, back to sensory stimulation then in that kind of 4 to 6 month period. So what else? What other top tips do we have?
So in the 4 to 6 month period, do everything that you were doing between 0 and 3 months. Don't just forget those things. They're still really, really relevant. So your baby still wants skin to skin. They still want massage. They still want you to talk to them. They still want eye contact. They still need you to be ultra, ultra responsive all the time. And because the more responsive we are, the more trust you're building, the better the attachment's going to be. But at this point, your baby's really, really going to enjoy, you know, singing, movement, playing with them in a slightly different way. So when we're using those nursery rhymes and singing those nursery rhymes, you can use more physical kind of actions, if you like, with them. Make those actions bigger, make their, you know, so that they're able to start using actions as well. They'll watch you and they'll begin to mimic you. Clapping's one of the first things that you'll see your baby beginning to do. Clapping's such a huge landmark for a baby, I think. You know, it's using both sides of the body to achieve a goal, using, you know, kind of both sides of the body, which shows you they've got the neural pathways between those two different sides of the brain.
Yeah, we often kind of just, these actions just happen, don't they? And we don't really think about how they happened and what has to happen in the brain in order for those things to happen.
Absolutely.
And that's why this stuff's so fascinating.
Yeah, so clapping is huge because, you know, clapping is all about, you know, at birth, the different hemispheres of the brain aren't really communicating with one another. So, and the left-hand side of the brain controls the right-hand side of the body and vice versa. And it's only when you've got that development of those neural pathways and connecting those two different sides of the brain that your baby's going to be able to coordinate movement with both sides of the body. So clapping, you know, that simple kind of, even just your baby bringing their hands together, one of the earliest things you see them doing, isn't it? First of all, staring at those hands and then being able to bring them together into like that kind of prayer position. Mm. And huge landmark for a baby.
So
singing, playing with your baby, clapping with your baby is massive. I think offering objects for them to grasp and hold. So, you know, at this point, like ribbons or scarves, this is where these things come in, those little shakers that we use all the time. So being able to grasp and develop those fine motor skills and that pincer grip that they're going to use eventually, they're going to use that strength that they're developing at this point for writing. Now all of these things lead to something else.
And again, it is interesting, isn't it? When you really start to understand the senses, then you look at objects in a different way, don't you? So it's not just visual with the ribbons. It's also they tactile. They can hold them. It's all about that pincer grip. So actually, some of these things really develop, like you said, loads of different senses all at the same time and integrate those senses.
It's absolutely. It is. I mean, so it is a sensorial education, if you like. Mm. And children do learn far more through the senses than they're ever going to in an abstract way. You know, children learn through experience until they're, you know, at a point much, much later when they're kind of like 6-7 years old. And that's when they're going to, you know, learn more from more abstract concepts. So I think also offering them different textures or having a different experience of texture and you know, different things at this point is really interesting. Narrate your day. I think beginning to narrate your day to a child of any age is really useful. And if it's a habit that you've got into, you know, early on, it's going to make the toddler years so much easier because toddlers are just permanently scared and frustrated because they don't know what's coming next. And so if you're already in the habit of going, right, now we're going to go into the kitchen, we're going to do this. And so it's helping your younger baby, you know, work out what's going on and understanding how they fit into this environment. But it's such a great skill. with those older children.
Yeah, I think when you're there, you know, most of us on our own at home with our babies, we think, oh, well, they don't understand me, so I'm not going to do it, or I don't need to kind of talk to myself. But actually, you really are talking to them, aren't you? Yeah. So it is really important. Yeah. Don't feel self-conscious, just do it naturally.
Yeah, just chat away to your baby the whole time, you know, talking about what you're going to do next, what's coming next, why you're going to do it, you know, allowing them to be able to see the change in your facial expressions. They'll start mimicking those facial expressions as well. You know, one of the earliest things that they mimic is being able to stick their tongue out. So if you start sticking your tongue out at your baby, they will reciprocate, and then you've got the raspberry blowing, which they love. Mm-hmm. And it's like these early forms of communication, which again are bits of sensory development, aren't they? Sort of like the kind of ability, that's the development of vision and the tactile sense again. And the other thing that I think we really underuse is floor time. Babies love floor time. It's having that freedom. So yeah, you can have a baby gym with all the bits dangling down over them, which is lovely and it looks really nice. You don't need it though. You could just have a blanket on the floor. And they definitely don't really need, you know, all of these more kind of these bigger bits of primary coloured plastic, you know, that are designed to help them have more tummy time and stuff like that. You don't need any of those things. Your baby is going to give them time on the floor. They're going to practice their rolling. You can start when they're approaching 6 months, you can start propping them up with cushions so that they're practicing their sitting.
Yeah.
So you really don't need an awful lot. I'd say a good play basket full of random objects from around your house, different textures. You know, we've done a video, haven't we, on
heuristic play baskets.
Which we love. So, but it can be like anything that you've just got lying around. You don't have to go out and buy special things to go in there. Wooden spoons, you know, metal spoon from your kitchen, bit of sponge from the bathroom, that kind of thing.
Pastry brush from the kitchen drawer.
Exactly. The stuff that you haven't used for ages because you've got a baby.
Yeah. And so, I get all in, they love it.
Just stick it all in there. Yeah. And that's going to be their favourite toy. And if you're worried about, because you're always going to get those friends and relatives who want to buy something for your baby, you know, get them to watch some of our videos, and they can give you some ribbon rings that they've made themselves. And get them to give you vouchers for clothes. That's far more useful.
Yes, because they grow out of them so quickly. I just wonder as well, as we're kind of here talking about this stuff, that there's a lot of reflexes in babies as well that we probably don't really understand. You know, you talk a lot in the classes about the Mora reflex, for example. I'm just wondering whether it's worth going through just a couple of those where people understand how they relate to sensory development as well.
Yes, so babies are born with a set of primitive reflexes, and I would actually have to sit and write them all down but the key ones, you know, you've got Mora reflex. So Mora reflex rules your baby's life, and Mora reflex is linked to vestibular development. So when your baby's born, they have this really strong Mora reflex, which means that every time you lie them down flat on their back, they startle. You know that feeling. Some people still get it as adults. I know I do, where you're lying in bed at night and just before you drift off to sleep, you get that sudden feeling like you're falling through the floor. That's unintegrated Mora reflex. And so Mora reflex is going to disappear as the vestibular system becomes more developed. Some babies suffer from, you know, pronounced Mora reflex kind of later, like for quite a long time. And these are the babies that can't, you know, sometimes that just can't be put down, that only want to sleep on your chest. And it's also why all newborns, you know, they will sleep, get incredibly deeply in contact on your chest, but you put them in that Moses basket on their back, and they're wide awake, aren't they? And they've startled, the arms are flying out, and that is Mora reflex in action. I think it is a case of understanding it, and understanding that babies are unlikely to sleep flat on their backs. You can prop your Moses basket or your next to me up a little bit at the head end so that it's tilted. But for most babies, that's still going to be too flat, and they're going to want to sleep on you.
But also just worth, you know, reiterating again that it is normal, and that their vestibular system will develop over time. So it's not going to be like this forever. But it's, again, one of those development milestones that will happen.
Definitely, it will get better. It will integrate over time. But the most important thing is to hold your baby and move with your baby. And that's why slings are brilliant for babies. All babies, but babies with pronounced Mora reflex are really going to benefit from being worn in a sling for extended periods of time, because they need that additional movement. They need you to move that fluid around in the canals of the inner ear to develop the vestibular system.
And that, from a sensory point of view, that helps their vestibular sense develop, doesn't it?
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. So that I would think morrow reflex is the primitive reflex that affects most parents more than anything else.
Yeah.
But you've also got things that you can see quite a lot, like the Palmer reflex, which is the one where babies automatically clasp their fist again.
Yeah.
You know, left over from those primitive humans and also our sort of ape cousins, and that ability that we had millions and millions of years ago to grip onto our parents, you know, which we've lost as our brains have developed and got bigger. And so because now all of those calories in the early part of life goes into that brain development rather than burning energy to hold on to your parents. So the Palmer reflex is all about that.
Mm-hmm.
And the plantar reflex, if you curve your finger down your baby's foot, you'll see the foot curl round as well. And that again is from being able to grip onto a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Another set of reflexes that's really interesting is this tonic labyrinth. And I think, and
I like the name.
The tonic labyrinth is one that I'd really like to spend a lot more time reading about, because I don't truly, it's so complex, I don't truly understand all elements of it. But again, I think it's, from what I've read, it's very much linked to the vestibular system. The tonic labyrinth is the reflex that enables your baby to raise their head and lift their head up off the ground they're born. So, you know, sometimes newborns are really good at tummy time. They lift their heads and they're really
strong. And everyone goes, oh, they're so strong.
They're so good. Yeah, they're so good at tummy time. And then it all disappears. Mm. And you're like, why? Why can't you do tummy time? Why don't you like it now? And so the tonic labyrinth is all about your baby being able to do the fetal crawl. So if you birth your baby and you left a baby, you know, kind of on mummy's tummy, it would have the ability to lift its head and crawl up your abdomen and latch onto a boob. Amazing. And there are some brilliant videos of this on YouTube if you want to see it actually happening. And then in the weeks after birth, that those reflexes disappear and your baby no longer is lifting their head and they haven't got that neck strength and that. So it's a reflex rather than strength, if you like.
Yeah.
It's
just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really incredible.
So much to talk about. I think for the purposes of time and to let you all get on with the rest of your days, we are going to leave it there. But hopefully, as with all our podcasts, you found that informative, it's useful. I think with any form of development, it's always nice just to have a bit more background, a bit more information, don't you think, Joe? Just so that we can make sense of it all.
I think the thing is as well, we just need to be able to understand our babies, because I think when we understand our babies, we feel more confident in our parenting.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you all very much for joining us. We look forward to chatting with you in our next podcast. But for now, thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye, everybody.